Hello, everyone. My name is Joey Kidney, and welcome to the Happy Times Podcast. This is a place where you can talk about listen to whatever I'm saying and feel comfortable. I hope this is a space where you can talk, you can bring this to other friends, where you can bring this to your parents. If you feel unsafe, then please let me know or join the Facebook group My Okay Place, and we can talk about it. But today is a special episode. You guys know that I never really have guests on here, and the reason why is because I don't really care for like interviewing people, because it's interesting, but I'd rather help people more. I'd rather talk about the deep stuff. I think those conversations really help people more than just learning about others. I think learning about why people think the way they think and do what they do and what they believe in is much more impactful. And there's this TikToker, he's more than just a TikToker, but you'll get to know him. His name is Matthias James Barker, and he's a TikToker that I found recently, and his videos are just absolutely amazing. And I wanted to bring him on, and we're going to talk a little bit about his backstory, because he is a licensed therapist. And we're also going to talk about, you know, why he became one, where he came from, where he lives, everything. And then we're going to dive into some questions like heartbreak, like overthinking, self-criticism. And it's going to be interesting because there's my point of view, someone who's unlicensed, someone who just learns from their own experiences, as well as he does, but he is licensed. He does know the proper way to answer certain things. So it's going to be truly, truly amazing. So I hope you guys enjoy. And if you do, please let me know, like DM me or something saying, hey, I listened to the podcast, blah, blah, blah. It would be really interesting. Okay. Enjoy. Here we go. Welcome to the Happy Times Podcast. All right. We're recording. How's it going?
Nice to meet you, man. Nice to see your face. I'm used to seeing you on TikTok, and you and I both have this thing where we get a camera and we make sure that it's like this really goopy lens so they can stare right into our eyes. You know,
the amount of comments that I get that are like, I'm staring into your soul. And it's like, I'm sorry.
Why did you choose to go that direction? Why do you have a great camera set up? And what was the inspiration behind that?
I mean, I've been doing YouTube for 8 years. So I had all the stuff. I'm so used to filming in front of a camera, like looking dead into it, that it was like a no-brainer. And what is different though is filming vertically really weirds me out. I don't know. And it zooms so much in. The way that the camera and the lens reacts to vertical, and like how it, because I use a Sigma lens, so it kind of like, it has that little tiny bit of warp at the bottoms, and it's just it makes everything pop.
I have a Sigma lens too. I use the 35. Is that what you're using?
I have that as well, but I use the 18 to 35 just because I have it. I use my 80D, so it's just a crop frame.
You know, I think what's cool is like not a lot of people are doing that on TikTok, so it's kind of an eye catcher because everyone's using their iPhones and everyone's just kind of being normal about it. And then
that's actually why.
There's Joey's eyes.
Literally, I'm just like there staring at people. Like, why is his eye so big? I'm like, I don't know. I don't know. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's funny.
But yeah, no, I tested it out because I was like, why? Like what works on TikTok when I was doing like all like what's my format, and I was doing iPhone stuff, and I'm like, it just doesn't, like, I don't want to watch this. But then I started doing the in-camera stuff, and I was like, whoa, this makes you stop. Right. And you do the same thing. And like, I'm always stopping, and your videos are, yours are all almost over 30 seconds, right?
I actually like, usually like almost up to 59 seconds exactly. So
yeah. And that's like breaking algorithm.
yeah. I don't get it. Well, because I originally got into it because like I've been on Instagram for a long time and just doing a bunch of videos there. And then Instagram came out with Reels, and I was like, I'll try this. And it was like 15 seconds, and I had a hard time fitting an idea into 15 seconds. Like, you can do it. Absolutely. Like, especially poets. You know, it's almost kind of the art is like, how can I make this as dense as possible and say the most with the smallest amount of space?
Well, I still find it hard for Reels. Like, so difficult. I found TikTok hard. So going from YouTube and making, YouTube was like 3 to 4 minutes. And then they were like, oh, now we like longer videos. And it was like 12 minutes long. They loved. And then so I started doing those, and then TikTok came out. I'm like, how? how am I supposed to do this again and go back? Like, it doesn't work. And then it worked. And then Instagram came out with Reels and I was like, I found that really difficult. So what I do is I have my cuts in my Reels. I like the one takes. I think like your videos with the one takes are like so captivating. It's like you're almost waiting for your thought to end, but then you keep going. And then that's where it's like, whoa, this is like, wow. This is, like, it adds a wow factor, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a cool way to put it. Yeah. I think you were the first person I saw on TikTok and I'm like, oh, we're up to the same thing. Like, there was just kind of this moment of like, oh, I couldn't find anyone else that maybe got maybe what I was trying to do. And I'm like, oh, Joey, he's doing it. Like, he's in that space where, and maybe I don't want to put words in your mouth, but this is how I'd summarize kind of what we're up to. It's like, we're putting emotions and thoughts and words to what feels really hard to describe, what feels really hard to put, I don't know, your finger on. Yeah. And then we say it in a particular way and it's like, oh yeah, that's it. Yeah. That's exactly how I feel.
Well, exactly. And I don't think it's like, I mean, we'll get more into to what you do as a profession, but I don't think it's some big, great, grand scheme of things. Like, I think sometimes just hearing the right words in the right format and right sentence really, really hits home with people. And it could be the easiest thing. It could be like four words and people are like, oh my God, you just solved my problem. It's just like they have it inside of them. They just need to hear it for themselves. And so that's what I think we do really well. Is that like, it's a lot, like, I think the stuff that you say are like, is awesome. It like goes to the really, like, it really shows how therapist, like how you're licensed and everything. But it's like simple lines can really, really help people and go a long way. And I think that's awesome. So about you more.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
So I noticed you also did a lot of photography as well, right?
Yeah. 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 So I was like, a photographer, and that's what put me through school. So I guess we haven't really done much of an introduction. I'm a psychotherapist in Spokane. So for anyone listening is like, who's this guy we're talking about TikTok? I counsel and I have like 30 clients that I just see every week here in Spokane. And I do a lot of couples counseling and I do a lot of trauma work. I do a lot of work with kids. I work with just people trying to figure out their anxiety and working through pain, working through relationships, stuff like that. So that's kind of my everyday job. But I did photography to kind of get through school. And so I was doing wedding photos. I was doing commercial work. I was doing photos for like, I did like an Instagram adventure photographer thing for a few years. And that was pretty fun. Like, I was just going on hikes and taking photos of like lakes and mountains and stuff. And then I got a bunch of followers.
I mean, I scrolled back to see, I was like, okay, there's, yeah. I find with people who can help other people, there's a lot to their life. And so I was like, okay, I want to see, I want to know. And I scroll back and I was like, your photos are beautiful.
Oh, thanks.
Like, please tell me you didn't stop taking photos.
Well, I think I work like 60 hours a week now, so I can't get out and hike as much as I used to. But I think what's cool is just kind of switching that creative brain onto a different task. And, like I'm really creative. I do a bunch of different kind of art forms. I play music. I do pottery. I love to write songs and stuff too. So there's just a lot of different creative, tasks that I fill my mind with and that keep me going. And so this was cool, 'cause it was like a blank canvas. It's like, oh, okay, I can do video. I can combine what I'm doing with psychotherapy. I can try to say it in a creative way. Like, and it's been like the way that I think about it is very much like I'm creating an art piece, not so much like I'm trying to educate people, not really like I'm trying to, like, I think about it more in the lines of poetry. It's like, how can I say the most in the smallest amount of space and get right past maybe people's like cynicism and intellectual boundaries that they just like set up because they're just defensive because the world's harsh and people are always trying to sell them something or people are always trying to like, everyone has an angle, but then I'm just like, hey, can we just sit in a space and be real for just a minute? And I think that's been a creative endeavor that's been super engaging.
Which is very, very, very surprising that TikTok likes your format.
Yeah, I have no idea why.
Like, I've been doing this full time for a very long time now. So it's to understand algorithms is a whole different world. And like TikTok loves short videos, but then you come in and you're like, no. Get that out of here.
Well, I got into the space and so maybe you've been in this space longer than I have. So help me make sense of this, because everyone doing psychological stuff was doing really positive, just kind of like catchy, pointing to thought bubbles, like kind of dancing, and everything was like super like lighthearted. And I thought, oh, okay, this isn't really a space for anything much to do with suffering or anything deep. And so I kind of wrote it off at first. And then, and it was also like you're saying, really short, five signs you're a narcissist, kind of stuff like that, like, or you're dating a narcissist or whatever. And then I just kind of put up some videos, not really trying to get with any sort of trend or do anything that I thought would work, just something that felt that I could get behind. Just
yeah. And then you wake up one day and there's thousands of notifications. Yeah. You're like, what, how did this work?
Well, that's literally what happened. So I posted like three videos. This was, what's the month before October? September, in September. And they got, you know, like that normal, just like a couple hundred views that you get when right. you start an account, like whatever. And then I closed the app. I didn't even open up TikTok for like a month. And I checked back and one of them had like 64,000 views.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, cool. And I posted another couple and then one went to 100,000. And then I posted three more and then one went to 500,000. And I was like,
yeah,
some things here. And that was really exciting. So I kind of just started posting daily after that.
Yeah. My girlfriend would always ask, she would be like, you're working too much. I'm like, I can't stop. Like something's here. Like I yeah, gotta keep going. I have yep. to dig. I have to find out what it is. I don't understand it. And that's mm-hmm. bugging me. I need to know how this success is happening. But I think you do a really, really amazing job with it. So I know thank I've you. Said that a lot, but I mean it.
Oh, that's kind. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
I think you're helping a lot of people in, I think people connect with you because it's a very friendly way that you're giving advice. And I don't mean to take away from the amount of studying that you've done.
No.
So you are licensed. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. So it's in Washington state. I'm pre-licensed. So that means I went through school. I have to get 2000 hours of counseling in before I get fully licensed, but that's just, you know, technicalities, but yeah. Yeah.
Well, so I feel like you're almost there if you're working 60 hours a week.
Yep. Yeah. That's I'm about there. So I'm close. I'll be testing awesome. Here soon. And yeah, I've been hitting the ground running. So it's been cool.
That's awesome. Well, I think you do it in like this. I know probably I don't necessarily think before I talk. So I'm just
yeah,
going to
no,
say,
you're fine. Same.
I think you do it in a very like you keep people on the same level as you. Mm. You don't come in the situation and it's just like, okay, wait, you're wrong. Here's why. You're like, okay, I hear you, but maybe think about this. You know, it's not, you don't shut people down right away. And I know these are just from TikTok videos, but
yeah,
you can just, yeah. or you just tell by the way that you approach a situation that you think about like how somebody may feel about it before they get advice. You know, when we ask somebody for their opinion, we don't want like just an answer right away. We want somebody to like kind of acknowledge that they were stressed, that we're struggling. Right. Mm-hmm. And then we want to know like, okay, well now what would you do versus just like, okay, here's what you need to do. No?
Yeah, it's a good way to describe it. Cool. I mean, a lot of the things that I'm posting on TikTok are things that I've, you know, kind of vetted through people. And so just in my sessions every week, it's like I'll have a word picture that comes to mind and I'm like, okay, I'm going to try to use this at least 3 to 5 times with people and see if it works first.
Yeah.
And then you get like real reactions because none of my clients think I'm anything impressive. I'm just their therapist, you know? So it's like, they're not going
to... That's pretty impressive.
They don't, well, they're not going to pat me on the back and try to make me feel good about anything. So it's
right.
They're going to react authentically and you can see it on their face. If they're confused, if that doesn't quite land, if it's a little too simplistic, if it's not quite proximal enough. And so I think what's cool is like getting within therapy, within just clinical work, like getting to carve out metaphors, getting to carve out ways of just talking about suffering or pain or relationships or love and getting to hear it off the canvas of like a lot of different kinds of people too. And then trying to distill out that common thread, like what's common amongst all these people when it comes to maybe like resentment against parents.
Right.
You know, so like in the 2 years that I've been walking, you know, 8 hours a day talking to people about their frustrations towards their parents, it's like, what's in common? And I'm like, okay, and I can pull that out. And that's maybe the creative, fun, intellectual part of it is like distilling out the essence of it. And then can I put that in a minute? And
so you're there talking about people's struggles and you're like, okay, well, hold on, TikTok, let me write this down.
No, I mean, it sounds a little corny, but yeah, I have a note open on my laptop just next to me and they're just talking and I'll just jot down it because I'll forget it if I don't jot it down. Yeah. But yeah, like, cause I'm always kind of like doing notes kind of on like case notes, like for insurance and stuff on the side too. But yeah, I have a little note where I'm just like metaphor with stick and dog and I'll just write that down. And then afterwards, I'll try to put that together and see if it sticks.
I So I do something where if I'm talking with my girlfriend, if I'm talking with my brother or a friend, and we're almost, if we're having like an argument or if we're discussing something, I'm like, I'll catch myself stopping, going to my phone. They're like, what are you doing? I was like, hold on. What you said was like really, really good. Like, I think I need something out of this. And they're like, what? And I have a hard time with that because like I work constantly, like all the time, like 24/7. So shutting off is very difficult, but I don't know. I'm young, so.
Yeah. Well, where do you pull a lot of that inspiration? So is that from friends? I know you're writing a book right now. Like, tell me about your process a bit.
Yeah, I got a few books going right now. I have always made my content because of other people. I started because I was a hockey player growing up, got a lot of injuries, and going from the tough sports guy to being injured, you find yourself there. Like, I'm telling you, like, any there's a lot of guys that would say the same thing. And so then I just, my friend, I like growing up, my friends would always come to me for advice. I'm like, I don't know. Like, it was even at the age where like girls still like cooties, they would come to me for advice. And I was like a late bloomer. Like, I nothing, never even talked to a girl, and they would come to me for advice. I'm like, why? They're like, you just seem like you got the answers. I'm like, oh, sure. I don't know. And then I started making YouTube videos about just like whatever was on my head and whatever people talked to me about that week. I just like made a video on it. And then I got called into the guidance counselor's office in like high school. And I was like, oh my God, what did I do wrong? They're like, I don't know what you're doing, but you're doing it right. And I'm like, what do you mean? They're like, people are coming in the office being like, this guy's videos helped me. And I'm like, what? And then I just took that and I got going. And it's been like this wild, wild journey. Which is interesting as like why it's kind of blowing up on TikTok, because what I've noticed is, like, you know, David Dobrik, right?
Yeah.
So take a David Dobrik video.
I don't know him. I watch him. I don't know him.
That's fair. Take a David Dobrik video. When you watch it, you're like, oh my God, this is so funny. Like, I want my friend to see this, and you send it off. Right. Mm-hmm. Take one of our videos. It's not necessarily like, oh my God, this is so funny, I want to send this to all my friends. No, it's like, oh my God, they're talking about depression that I can really relate to. Like, I don't know if I want to send this to my friends. But on TikTok, like, you can see the shares, and it's thousands. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, this is how people are communicating to their friends that they're going through something, which is really interesting to me. It's like this small little piece of content can help define everything that they're going through to their friends, because they might not be able to word it, but we could. And that's really interesting to me.
Yeah. I think that's a new thing. Like, as far as media goes, is because I saw the same thing. I did a video like on childhood trauma, and it got 50,000 shares. And I was like, who's sharing this depressing video? And I was like, I wouldn't even share this. No, that's not true. I did share it. I posted it, but I was shocked. I was like, wow, there's something, not only this is resonating with people, but this is like, oh, I want to tell other people about this. And I think there's this authenticity kind of just rising up from, I don't know, maybe it's a younger generation. I think TikTok is actually more diverse than people think age wise, but people kind of feel this. I think the stigma around mental health is really decreased, maybe even gone, I think, especially in more kind of like coastal cities and stuff. Maybe in the center of the country, it's a little different in the US, but around mental health stigma, around being able to be forward about things like, I'm experiencing depression, I'm experiencing crisis. There's less shame around that. It's not as stigmatized. So that's interesting.
Well, one thing that's like always really hard to talk about is that I actually think it became a trend for a little bit. Like I think anxiety became like this clickbait on YouTube a lot, and people started like making merch of it and like just putting the word anxiety on a shirt, and like, that's cool. I mean, it's not, in my opinion, but like, if you want to make your money that way, like, that sucks. Like,
wearing it as a badge of honor, kind of.
Yeah. And it's like, it's your own struggle. It's what you deal with. But it's just like, to profit off of somebody's struggles, it's like a, you know, the only people who should do that is a therapist who's helping do it. So it's just like, there's many different ways you can look at it. But I want to know, what made you want to become a therapist? What made you want to talk to people and work through things?
I actually wanted to be a pastor. So I grew up, you know, in church and volunteering, and I was like on staff as like a music director for a church in high school. And then I went to college to get a Bible degree and was convinced that I was going to be a pastor. And so I did a lot of like public speaking classes and preaching classes. And I loved that aspect of it. I loved communicating. And so I think that was fun. And then I led like a college internship ministry in my undergrad. And then, yeah, I don't know, there's a long story to that, but lots of different roles within church. And then I had this huge falling out with the church maybe 2 or 3 years ago, where I went through a pretty big faith crisis and deconstructed a lot of the things that I held really closely. And honestly, like maybe the center pillars of my life were all kind of organized around Christian faith and church. And that was going to be my career. That was how I thought about myself. Those were the themes that held together, well, everything. And so when that fell out, that was really traumatizing. And so I was kind of scrambling at the end of that, like, what the heck do I do? Like, so if I'm not going to be a pastor, if I'm not going to be in a church setting, like, do I work? I was working at Apple. Yeah. I was working at Apple at the time. And I'm like, I'm tired of resetting people's Apple IDs and helping people figure out their password. And, gosh, and I don't know, there's so many parts of just like life that I felt so discontent with. And I was just like, I feel like I'm supposed to be doing something. I feel like my whole life's been going one direction, and then I got veered off, and now I'm just kind of left, yeah, kind of afloat at sea.
And how old are you?
So I'm 20. How old am I? I'm 28 now. I said some other age. I'm 28 now. And so this was like 24, 25. This was
okay. Happening. So I'm 24. So around that makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, so and then that's when you switched over and you went to school where you live?
Yeah. So I did an online program. So I actually had a therapist. So I was in therapy, and my therapist was like, you'd probably be a good counselor. And, you know, you could probably do like shepherding, quote unquote, was kind of the Bible-y church word for it. But you could do that with just people. Like, you can still help people. Like, why not just do what you were doing in church, but just kind of in a, I don't know, a psychology setting? I was like, oh, that's actually a pretty interesting idea. And so I decided to do that and went to start my master's program and did an online program, which I wouldn't recommend to anybody. I didn't like the school that I went to at all, but it was very good. But I actually came across just a lot of different psychologists. I think what maybe a lot of people don't know, unless you're in it, is a lot of like the core dudes. So we're talking like Freud and Carl Jung and Jean Piaget and Carl Rogers, like just the men who built psychology from the ground up. A lot of them, not Freud so much, but a lot of them started out with a lot of faith questions and a lot of questions about who is God and what is my identity as in regards to, like, you know, faith and religion. And so what was fascinating to find was all these men who were wrestling through and struggling through how to put together their identity in reference to God. And it was actually through maybe a lot of that that I recovered a lot of that faith and built that back up and actually entered back into church and like organized all that again. And then I found myself in this field having gone through a pretty huge identity transformation. And I was like, oh, okay, I think I'll just stick here because I think there's something unique here. I really love the world of counseling psychology. It's made me a lot more of a versatile person, like being able to talk about suffering and stuff, not just through a theological lens, but through like a psychological lens. And
right.
I feel like I talk to just everyday people with a lot more authenticity and realness because not everything has to be geared through religious stuff. And not that that's bad when that presents itself. It's just, it's been
cool. Well, the other thing is that you can also reach a wider audience when you talk about it in that way.
Exactly.
As well, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So that's a big part of the story is kind of just this identity. So me becoming a counselor was right in the middle of maybe this huge breakdown in who I was and then rebuilding that and then actually recovering a lot of those themes at the end of it to where I feel whole, like I feel put back together. And that's really cool.
And do you still feel that way? Like, why do you, I guess the question is like, why do you continue doing it?
Yeah, I guess that's a good question. I really enjoy it. I think the part that I liked about doing church work was the one-on-one conversations I was having with people. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, I think, I really enjoy like volunteering at my church and doing a lot of stuff through that. But the everyday conversations I get to have with like couples and then maybe the practical knowledge, like the, just on the ground level, stuff of like, okay, you're having a huge argument right now about how to organize your budget and your finances, and you're at each other's throats. Like, here's like a step-by-step procedural process, if you need it, to not just like figure out your budget, but how to come near each other warmly, how to come near each other, like with trust and with closeness. And so that you can figure out any problem, not just your finances or how to discipline your kids or how to, I don't know, your sex life or whatever. It's like,
right,
let's actually bring emotional warmth back into this relationship, trust back into this relationship.
And rather than, I guess a lot of people come into the problem with just addressing an issue with their spouse or partner with stress, right? Yeah. They come into it just completely stressed, and they don't know how to like decompress before talking to somebody. And that, I mean, that's something that everybody struggles with. Yeah. And that's one thing I found about like relationships is that it kind of stays the same through high school to getting married. Like I used to live in this apartment building when I was a classic like YouTuber, you know, like things started going well, you know, you move out, you buy a car, all that stuff. I just moved out, and I moved out into this apartment where everyone in the building was actually a divorcee. Like everyone was divorced, and everyone has been through life, right? They're all 30 plus, and I lived on this one floor, and I was that type of person who I wanted to make friends. I'd literally like knock on everyone's door, and I was like, "Hi, I'm Joey." Blah blah.
Yeah.
I got really close with like my end unit people, like these four apartments that were right beside mine, and they would all be going through something with relationships, and they would all like knock on my door, be like, "Hey, I want to talk." And I'm like, "Okay," I'm like, at the time I was 20. I'm like, "I'm just a 20-year-old. Like, I don't know about like marriage or dating people. Like, I don't know. I haven't been through it." And they were just like high school. All the same issues. Was like, "Okay, well, how do you think like they're going to react to that?" Mm-hmm. I'm like, "Well, I think you just got to find out, man. Like, I don't know." So it was really interesting. This might be a weird question. Is there a certain topic that you enjoy talking about with people?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Like, do you like the couple counseling more? Do you like talking about anxiety? Mm-hmm.
I really like couples counseling. I like different topics for different reasons, maybe is the right answer. So couples counseling is exciting because it's like because you have two people in there and both people are just as complex. And so it's like, it really sometimes feels like counseling on steroids, because you're not just trying to pay attention to the body language and what people are saying, keeping track of storylines with one person. You're doing that with two people. And so it's hyper engaging. Like, there's probably no other sessions that fly by as quickly as couples sessions. And so I extend couple sessions out to 90 minutes just so I can keep up, I guess. But it's really engaging. And I think what's cool about it too is, there's not a lot of situations where you can look at somebody and be like, you have all the tools in front of you to be able to fix this if you want to. Like with psychopathology, like when someone has like clinical depression, sometimes there's just biological components that are out of whack, and you're going to find coping mechanisms. You're going to find ways of processing the trauma, the hardship that you're going through, finding ways to motivate yourself, finding ways to engage with life meaningfully. Yeah. But there's going to be this cloud that's going to come at times when you don't predict, when you don't understand, that is going to make things just more challenging. And so it's not like you're ever telling anyone to resign to anything. There's better and worse ways to handle that. But with couples work, what's interesting is, okay, there's a breach of trust. There's a lack of emotional warmth, a lack of closeness. There maybe has been like a key betrayal that's happened. Here are the tools to be able to have conversations to build this back up. And they're available to you if you want to follow us. So for example, like one of the first things we talk about is, okay, you have to repeat back what the other person says in your own words. And then they have to agree that that was what they said before you can make a comment. So if someone says,
it gets people rethinking.
Yeah. And it gets people listening, like actually listening, because you can't shoot in and be like, "That's not how it happened," or "Of course you would say that," or and you know, you can't respond contemptuously, because you have to, before you can respond, before you can ask a question, before you can say anything, I want you to listen to the other person. And when they talk, you need to repeat back what they said in your own words. And then they have to agree, "Yep, that's what I said." They have to agree that that's it first, before you can continue. Wow. And so that cuts out so much of the like venom because you can't be, oh, so what you're really saying is that you just think I'm an idiot. And then the person will be like, no, that's not what I said at all.
Yeah.
And you know, and
that,
so then
just that constant back and forth, the vicious cycle, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's so what I think a lot of people are shocked to find out is that they have to repeat what the other person said 4 or 5 times before they get it right.
Right.
And then when they do repeat it back, maybe an exchange of 3 or 4 different, you know, kind of going back and forth in conversation, they solve their problem lightning fast.
Right.
And because it turns out like you can't, it's really hard to be critical and blame someone when you're trying to listen and you're trying to repeat back to them what you heard them say.
Well, I think listening is like, I think listening is the greatest skill that anybody can have. I think it's really impressive. When I think about that, you know, when you're going out with friends and you meet somebody new and you say hello, you ask for their name, you forget it in seconds. You didn't even listen to their name. Yeah. But then they're like, later they're like, oh, Joey, so you said you were writing a book. Like, how's that going? And you're like, oh, whoa, what? Like immediately you feel just like comforted by this person. You're like, okay, like it was a little scary that they knew so much. Like it shocks us that people listen.
Yeah.
And so.
Yeah. It's a whole skill in itself because listening isn't being quiet. Like listening is being able to synthesize what someone's saying and then actually giving them a signal back that you heard them, like actually repeating back in your own words.
Yeah.
And that's powerful. So when someone listens to you and then even like 10 minutes, like you're saying down the conversation, they reference it. It's like, oh, you were there. You weren't just in your own head trying to figure out what to say next. Cool.
I used to do this thing on, it's funny because like on TikTok, I'm known as like the sad guy with the sad eyes and whatever. I talk about the struggles and all that, but I'm like in person, like I'm like the funny guy out of my friend group. Like I'm the guy always making jokes and that's just like my release.
Yeah.
But the one thing that I noticed with making jokes is the only way to make people laugh or to know you're going to make somebody laugh, to know a joke is going to hit, is to reference from earlier in the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll be talking about something and like 10 minutes go by and I make a joke about that. So I know they're going to understand.
Yeah.
And so it's similar. I think everything that we talk about, everything that we deal with kind of like intertwines. Mm-hmm. And it just makes sense because we're all friggin' thinking about it, right? Yeah. We're all going through these struggles, these issues, everything in our lives. And it's just like, it can't be so separate. Right? Like it doesn't make sense to me how people think about, you know, say like their childhood and then what they're going through now. And they're like, oh no, my childhood, I already lived that. Like that doesn't have anything to do with the struggles I'm going through now. I'm like, well, you know, it could be a factor. Yeah. Right.
I love that. That's so good. And I think you're on too, because there's a connection there between humor and being able to touch on people's pain. And the awareness of both, there's a correlation there. I resonate with what you're saying. Cause I'm just the guy with my friends that's just goofy. And actually like I'm an Enneagram 7 and a lot of people are like really shocked to find that. Cause I like to party and have fun and just tell jokes and be not serious. And then I'm this counselor who talks about serious things all day. So,
well, that's the thing. You need the release. You need it.
Yeah.
And like, I'm very, very open about that. Like I make jokes about like, you know, what I've gone through. Like dark humor is like my favorite thing in the entire world.
Yeah.
And I'm super open about that because I don't want somebody being like, oh my God, you talk about like serious stuff. And then they'd be like, oh, but I saw like this one video you made a joke about this. Like, we're going to cancel that. I'm like, no, like I have to, you have to have a release somehow, especially if you're dealing with a lot of people's struggles, people are like DMing you constantly. You're reading like, you have to have this release to just do it in your own way, in a safe way. That's not going to harm anybody else. Like, I think that's harmless.
Well, I've been wondering, so you've been in the public eye for a bit doing YouTube and then TikTok and you've kind of been all, I was looking you up and you're just kind of everywhere, which is awesome. Yeah. But how do you balance that, like your own mental health with being in the public eye and then also having maybe a character that you portray in front of people, and then so people have these expectations when maybe they meet you in public or something.
Yeah.
And then, but you have this whole other like 99% to your personality that people don't see.
I think that's what makes it easy. So like that would be the separation. So when I hang out with my friends, and you have to have good friends to do this. I think that's the key. A lot of like, I don't want to move out to LA because I don't think there's real friendships out there. And I've been out there. Yeah. I have a lot of friends out there, like in the YouTube, in the YouTube game, they're all out there. And when I have my friends here, like we joke around, we have fun, but they still come to me for serious stuff. And it's just, it's so important to play a character in your work, because if there's no such thing as being raw and real online, you can attempt it.
Yeah.
But no matter what, you're sitting at the computer typing up a caption or editing it or changing the way it looks, like it's always going to be edited. And as long as you know that as a creator, then there's that separation automatically, right? Because I'm sitting at the computer, I'm like, I filmed something in 15 seconds, a minute, but then I go to the computer and I'm sitting down for 15 minutes to make it look good.
Right.
So that doesn't add up. So that separation of that hard, that work, that's when I know that's a different me, right? Mm. Is when I have to put in this hard work. So I'm still raw, I'm still real, but it's just a creation of that. And I try to do it in a way that, like I was complimenting you before, I was like saying how you do it in a really friendly manner. And I think that's so important, especially with creating raw, real content, air quotes, online. It's like, you have to do it in a way that isn't you saying, okay, I'm better than you, so you're going to listen. Like, I have this many followers, so you're going to listen to me. Now that's the key is to stay humble with all of this. Like, a lot, I get a question a lot, like, why haven't I moved out to LA and stuff like that? And it's just like, I'm going to miss my mom.
Yeah.
You know, like, I have a Jeep. I'm very happy. I can drive anywhere. I love taking public transit. I love it. And I hate when people of like with followers or an influence, talk about like being humble. They're like, yeah, I do this to try to stay humble, but like, and it sounds so cocky, but it's actually so important to work on being humble, to work on humility and like everything like that. Right. Yeah, so it's difficult, but it's, I think people make it harder than what it's set out to be. Right?
Yeah.
They just get lost in it.
Yeah, I have a line that I said in the video, but it's that the opposite of humility isn't pride, it's shame. And that there's this idea that I think people who are constantly focused on trying to lower their ego have a really self-critical like battle with their own hearts and in their own minds.
Yeah, and that's really good.
And there's I had a buddy ask me, like, how are you keeping a level head and all this? And I was confused by the question, because I'm like, oh, I don't even think about it. Like, the way I explain it's like, because I'm a symbol online. That's really psychologically what people are connecting to. It's been weird. I went from, you know, just filling up my caseload, just kind of like any other normal therapist, having a 4-year wait list in 1 month.
Right.
And just because everything blew up on TikTok, which was incredible. So I have like 1,000 people waiting to see me for counseling. But what I know is like, they're all going to be profoundly disappointed once they meet me. And that's not even necessarily like me being self-deprecating or anything. It's because I'm a symbol. I said something in 1 minute because I used an analogy that really struck with them. And the 60 minutes that they meet with me is not going to be as impactful
as a 1 minute.
Minute by minute as that 1 minute was. You know what I mean? So it's like, because that was an art form that was crafted, like you're saying, that was edited. But when you sit in the room with me, I'm just a normal person who makes jokes and burps and I don't know, like that isn't all like coiffed hair and fancy lighting. It's just, I'm just a dude and I'm going to say things that are inspirational and helpful sometimes. And then I'm going to miss the mark. Like, I'm not going to hear you right. Or you're going to be offended by something I say. And that's not anything else than just being a human being.
That's called a human interaction. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just a human interaction. It's just going to be normal. And that's going to be profoundly disappointing for some people because, and I'm not even trying to stave that off. It's just like, well, yeah, it's going to be normal. You're going to get in the session. You're going to sit across from me. You're going to think that I'm going to fix your life and it's not going to happen because the tools to fix your life were always in your camp. Like that was always you. And I can point out which ones might be helpful and even show you how to use some of them.
Especially it's not going to happen in 60 minutes, right? It's going to happen in multiple sessions. It's going to take years. And that's what I think a lot of people, like I've gone to a therapist ever since I was 16.
Yeah.
I've gone through actually 17 therapists and just finding the right one. I remember my first therapist, I thought it was like, she was like going to fix everything. I thought it was you go into surgery and you come out and you're okay. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And there was this older woman, probably 50s, 60s, and I was 16. and she had this thick Indian accent. And I was there and I was like, what the hell is she saying? Like, I'm 16.
Couldn't understand her.
I was a hockey boy. Like, I'm like, I don't know anything what she said. Like, I could not understand. Yeah. And I remember I was telling her, like, what's going on in my head. And then the next session, she would be like, okay, so you play lacrosse? And I'm like, I'm sorry. No.
Yeah, right, right.
And multiple sessions with you. Like, and she's like reading off what she wrote down. I understand there's a lot of clients and stuff, but it's just like that moment. I was like, wait, this is not how it's supposed to be. Like, there's not that much disconnection with somebody. And so I think, like, when people think about therapists, they're like, okay, I signed up, I'm ready, I paid my money, let's go, fix me. And it's like,
yeah.
It's just, that's just not it. It doesn't work like that. Like, you can't walk out on the street and just find a new best friend.
Right. Right. Yeah. That's a really close comparison. It's like friendship.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. And one of the things that, when people meet me, there was a phase in my little career where people were wowed when they saw me. Like, when they saw me, they're like, oh my God, Joey, like, what? And this is when I was like younger. It was like the teenage heartthrob, whatever. They were like, oh my God, I want a picture. I would always be like, this Happy Times episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. I need to get something off my chest. I recently turned 28 and I'm freaking out. Owning a home, taxes, and being a real adult comes with a lot of stressors that I wasn't really prepared for. And the best way to get something off of my chest is to talk to someone, which is where therapy comes into my life. Talking with someone that has the knowledge and information to help me look at my issues from a different perspective has helped me slow down my life a little bit and help calm me down. If this is something that you can relate to, then I recommend you give BetterHelp a try. So get it off your chest with BetterHelp. You can visit betterhelp.com/happytimes today and get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/happytimes. And now back to the episode. No matter what, like, say I was out like eating with friends and they came up to me, I'd be like, they would be like, oh my God, hi, Joey. And I'm like, hey, so what do you think I should order? I would just like
humanize yourself a bit.
I would just involve them into my conversation. I would never, ever change what I was talking about. I would be like, oh my God, hi, thank you so much. Like, I would, but I would then involve them into, like, if I was out with friends, I would introduce them. Like, I would just, and it was way, I grew up a shy kid. So it was so much easier for me to not be like, oh my God, what's up? Yeah, I'm Joey. Let's take a picture, like, in front of everybody. I was like, that's just not me. So I was like, I would always just bring them into the conversation that I was having. And my friends were always like, how do you not get awkward? I'm like, why would I get awkward just to talk about what I'm already doing?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. That's cool.
So that's how I do it. But okay. We posted on Instagram about talking about, let's do a little advice session.
Yeah,
so
that's right.
We asked for some things. I think the first thing that'd be really interesting to talk about, because I see a lot of it, especially online and especially in quarantine right now, is long distance relationships.
Right, right.
Have you ever been in one? Because you're expecting a child now too, right?
Yeah, we are. Yeah, yeah.
That's so amazing. Congrats.
My wife Paige and I have been married for 7 years, and we're expecting a little girl in March. So we're pumped. Yeah.
Do you have a name picked out? Do you have names?
We have a tentative name, but I gotta see her. You know, got to see her face. I got to see if it fits. Yeah. Like, Paige has been making fun of me because every time we say a name, we're trying to figure out a name, I have to go like yell it real quick in the house. And she's like, why? She's like, because it has to yell well.
Yes.
Like, I have 100%. The syllables have to roll off the tongue. It has to feel like I could just, you know, bark it if they're running out in the road. Like, it can't sound weird.
I don't mean to compare it to this, but like, literally when I was picking my dog's name, hold on. And I opened the door and I yelled it. I was like, Frankie. And then I was like, yep, that works.
That works. Yeah. So you always got to try it on like you're trying on clothes. Like, you just have to wear it for a bit and see if it fits.
Once you see her, you'll know for sure.
Yeah. I got to see her. But long distance. So Paige is from Indiana, and we met in school, in college. And so she would go back to work at home during the summers. And so we had like summer breaks and Christmas breaks apart. And so there was like a 3-4 month period, maybe twice a year, that we'd endure. So, I mean, that's not as long as a lot of people when they think long distance relationships, but so I maybe can relate to the stresses of it. Have you been in one?
Yeah. So I was in one for a year and a half, and it actually ended like very mutually, very just like, I feel like with relationships, you know, You know where it's going, and especially with long distance, and I feel like especially at certain ages as well, mm-hmm. you can kind of see where it's going. And she was going off to college. She lived in Florida. I lived in Ottawa in Canada. So it was like quite a separation, but I was also on tour. I was on tour for 3 years.
Yeah.
And so every time, instead of flying home, I would fly to her. So mm-hmm. I saw her probably every 2 weeks, mm-hmm. maybe definitely every month.
Yeah.
And it was great. It was honestly the separation. I feel like you definitely need your alone time in relationships. Mm-hmm. So it was like perfect. You know, I had time with them, and then I'd go have me time, and then I would go have time with that. It was awesome. But the distance, you know, you go your separate ways. And especially when people are going off to college, like, experience is an amazing thing. And I don't think we should ever like take experience away from somebody. And so that's what she went off and did. And that's what I went off and did. Mm-hmm. But I think everybody always asks me about long distance relationships. Mm-hmm. The number one thing that I think about is you have to think that you want your long distance relationship to end. And in the way that you don't want it to be long distance anymore. You have to end the distance part. So you have to think in the future that like, okay, I want this to end, in the sense that you're going to be in an actual relationship where you're there, you're here with each other. Right. And a lot of people, like, especially right now, they, with quarantine, it's so tough because we're talking with so many people online and they get infatuated over text.
Yeah.
There's nothing necessarily wrong with that. I also don't think there's something great about that. It's kind of like in this limbo, like in this inception limbo where you're like, okay, this is like some picture perfect world. And then that's when, you know, they sit down for that 60 minute session. They're like supposed to be wowed. And you're like, okay,
what do you think are the signs for somebody that if they're trying to figure out, okay, is this good? Is this going somewhere positive, or should I break this off? Any things that you'd look for?
In long distance? I mean, communication is so key. Everyone always says that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think with communication, it's almost better when somebody's not speaking and you can communicate just through knowing. I don't know if that makes sense. Like, but I think especially with relationships, if you need to talk about everything, every single thing that you did that day, or you're updating them while you're doing it, then I think that person is almost really scared to lose you. They kind of know that it's going away versus, you know, at the end of the day, you sit down and you have that conversation, right? I think that's really important, because then it's wowed. It's like, what did you do today? Oh, wait a second. I already know everything that you did. There's nothing here for me.
Well, it sounds like you're saying that like it's a blend of trust, like just like a security in the relationship to where you don't always have to be following up, but then also maintaining individuality and having something to bring to the table.
Well, I think with long distance, that's super important, right? Because you're not there. Mm-hmm. You're not there. Like, so I think as long as you both really know and you have common ground of, and I understand that this is still distance, you're going to talk to other people. And as long as you're open to, I think the people who hold on to somebody in a really negative way, it's like, okay, who'd you talk to? You talked to Sarah? Like, okay, no, I said you can't talk to her anymore. You can't. It's done. It's already done. Like that's a really hard thing to work on. And to understand a thought that somebody can't explain to themselves in a relationship that's really tough. And especially in distance, right? Because you're not there to work through it. You're not there to meet Sarah. You're not there to understand that relationship. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's hard to have conflict outside of the context. It's hard to understand the variables that you're trying to fix or make better without having a full understanding of what's happening.
Yeah. So how do you think somebody would make it work?
Well, the biggest thing I say is it has to be worth it. Like the distance has to be worth it. Not even worth it like, oh, I love this person, so it's worth staying with them. I just mean like, well, what's the reason you guys are separate? Like, what's the reason you guys are in different cities? What's the reason you guys are in different places?
Right.
Or what you're doing that's keeping you there, is that worth it? So for example, like if you're just living in different cities and that's just because you work where you grew up and you have different families and you're like, oh, we'll just be in this relationship. We'll kind of see where it goes. I mean, there's a trial period where that makes a lot of sense, but eventually, like, I like what you're saying is it has to, you have to have a vision for how you're going to end the distance. And so someone's going to have to come either to the other person's city, or you're going to have to meet somewhere halfway. But if it's like someone's going to school in a different city, is that degree program worth it? Do both people in the relationship feel like, yep, okay, he's going to go to school for 4 years and then he's going to come back home, and that's worth it because that degree program is really going to open up doors for his career, and that's meaningful, you know?
4 years is a long time. I don't think people understand that because that's a huge, that's a common thing is people going to school, right? That's a huge thing for distance. And it's like 4 years is a long time.
And it's a transformation going to school. Like you're a different person at the end of it. So it's not obvious that the person you dated when they left is the person you're dating when they get back.
Yeah. But and if they are, then that's also something you got to look into, right? Because you've changed. Like we change. Mm-hmm. It's normal.
Right. Right.
And I think when I was in a long distance relationship, the one thing that made it work was planning the next. If you are distance, if you are going to school or whatever you're doing, like I think don't leave until you have a goal for the next meet or the next end or whatever it is. And I think that's important because it's not just up in the air. It's not just like, it's like when you go out with drinks for friends and you're like, okay, yeah, I'll see you next time. And it's like, when is next time? No, it's going to be never. Like you need to kind of like set it like, or you know what I mean?
I've also seen, so I've worked with a lot of people who just have jobs that they're gone a lot. Like just people who work on construction sites and they'll go to a job that's just kind of in the bush or deep in the woods where they're gone for like 2 weeks at a time, putting piping in or something or clients who, you know, one person's in the military and then they go on deployment. So they're gone for like 8 months or longer, you know, sometimes because of that. And the question again for them is the same question it is for, you know, the 18-year-old trying to figure out, do we still date even though they're going to school in a different state? Is it worth it? Is what they're going to do worth the sacrifice of the distance? And
one of the biggest things that, so I talk with therapists, I actually use BetterHelp, and I found the perfect therapist for me, especially in quarantine. Like things were shut down and I was like, everyone's going through their own thing right now, but I found this great therapist, and she would always ask me about when I would talk about like past relationships or current relationships, she would always ask me the one question. She's like, always ask yourself, is this fair to them? Those words destroyed me. Every thought that I was like, oh yeah, I know what's going on. She asked me that. And I was like, whoa, you know, is this fair to them?
Yeah.
And so holding people accountable, especially in relationships it's very common, but it's also almost invisible a lot of the time. Like we don't notice we're doing it. And so like asking yourself that like every so often, I think is super important. And it's so powerful. Like that one line is it fair to them? Because then you obviously you're always thinking about yourself, you know, I don't care. It doesn't matter. You're always, thinking about yourself first. It's always going to be that way. So asking that, like, obviously, you know, is it fair to yourself? Like you're already asking yourself that. So thinking about them is a huge thing for a lot of people.
Absolutely.
Well,
that's a great answer. I love that.
Yeah. I thought I've talked about relationships and I've talked with my friends and I feel like I'm very educated on it. And she popped that question. I was like, everything I know is wrong. I was like, what? It was great. It was awesome. Yeah. What was the top question that you got asked on Instagram?
Got a lot asked a lot about long distance. I think there's also just a lot of talk around anxiety and feeling like, how do I let thoughts go that just feel intrusive and like they're just kind of like bumping into my mind and I can't let it go. So that could be stuff about self-criticism and feeling frustrated at yourself for failure. That could be just fear of the future and not really sure how things are going to pan out. But what do you do when you just feel overwhelmed mentally, like when those thoughts just jet into your mind?
I think finding your own little outlet is so underlooked.
Yeah.
Right. And I find a lot of the DMs that I get are, you know, okay, I'm feeling this way. How do I solve this? But like, you don't have to solve it right away. And I think you kind of, like you were saying in therapy, you ask the couples to kind of like, repeat what the other person said. And I think that's almost important for ourselves as well, for having this question that's going on in our minds. Like, I think it's important to revisit stuff. So in my situation, like, I know if I have a big thing on my head, I'm very impulsive. I can't decide this right away. So I'll go out for a run and then I'll come back and I'm like, exercise is the number one thing for me. I think it's a huge factor for everyone, but it's not for everyone. But I think it could help a lot of people. It's just dopamine, it's endorphins, it's blood level, it's everything. It's just changing something. I think for men especially, like, playing video games is huge. Like, a lot of girls don't understand their boyfriends playing video games. I'm like, it's because they shut off. Guys can like really only think about like one thing at a time. And it's like, when they're overthinking, it's not so easy to just multitask. So it's like, when we're playing Call of Duty and we're killing a lot of people, it's like nothing else is in our head. We have this headset on and we're just going, and like, we need that time, that alone time from our thoughts even. That's how I solve it. It's a lot of people would think about that as like ignoring the problem. It's not. It's just thinking about it in kind of a different headspace as well. Like, I'll go out on a run. Like, I think about all my ideas and everything that I talk about when I'm out running. I'll talk to friends and they'll talk about a struggle and I'm like, okay, that's really good. But I don't have an answer yet. I don't know what I would say about this. I'll go for a run and I'll be like, randomly, I'd be like, oh shit, that was it. That's it.
Yeah.
What would you say? Like, obviously,
that's so good. Exercise, well, but I think there's a theme in what you're saying that I say the same thing, where it's this, I have a psychobabble term for it, which is just called diffusion. That's like, that's what you'll see in all the textbooks. But all that means is this ability to like notice a thought that comes in your head and not have to act on it immediately in the way that it demands you to act. Meaning like, okay, so you have this thought that's like, oh crap, maybe I'm being awkward.
Right.
Okay. So then maybe that jumps into your head. And then what happens in this conversation is you'll immediately just stop listening to what the other person's saying and you'll start hyper-focusing on, okay, what am I doing that's being awkward right now? Like, is my hair weird? Or is my fly down? Like, I don't know. Like, you start thinking, you just become hyper self-conscious of yourself. And then, am I talking too loud? Am I talking too soft? Am I talking enough? And then the other person looks at you and says, well, what do you think? Like, oh crap, I wasn't listening.
Yeah.
And you feel really, really like reinforced, meaning like you'll think to yourself, yep, I knew I was awkward. And that's actually an interesting conclusion to not listen because you're being self-conscious, to then experience awkwardness in the conversation, but it's because you were being self-conscious. So like another way I like to explain this is, people have severe OCD. Like, let's say they're really nervous about germs and they wash their hands 300 times a day. And what you'll notice if you work with people with severe OCD like that is they'll get cracks on their knuckles. They'll get cracks on their hands. Their skin will actually start to like really dry up because of the sulfates in the soaps. And sometimes there's lotions and stuff that help. But
everyone in COVID right now.
Yeah, right. So, you know, what will happen sometimes is that one of those cracks will get infected. Like, I had a client that had a really bad infection on the cracks in her hands. And that's because she was washing her hands. And there was a huge aha moment that the thing I was doing to run away from the problem brought about the catastrophe that I was worried about.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Wow. That's really interesting.
That happens all the time in so many different things. So the social awkwardness, the anxiety about being socially awkward created social awkwardness. Right?
Yeah.
So there's this moment where we have to think, okay, I have a thought occur to me. I'm being awkward. I have a thought occur to me. I'm going to get germs. I'm going to get sick. I'm a failure. I shouldn't even be in this job. This relationship is over. The distance isn't working. Whatever. There's some sort of catastrophe that occurs to you. And that's good and fine. But then the question is two things. What is your interpretation of that thought? Like, is that coming from the deepest, truest parts of you? And that's absolute truth. Or could that be misguided in some way? And the second is, okay, what do I do in response to this thought? And that's where you're saying, like, maybe you just need to go on a run and that's okay. And that's not being genuine. Like, it's like, who says that every thought that pops in your head is you? Like, why can't that just be that really critical teacher from school? Why can't that be your mom? Why can't that be, you know, the you that was like worried about whatever? It's like, there's a looseness that we can hold our thoughts and they occur to us in our mind. And then we can actually have some grace for them. We can hold them just a little bit further away from us and be like, okay, yeah, interesting thought. I'm going to figure out how to act on that thought a little later. And that's actually okay.
Yeah. It's perspective, right?
Yeah.
And I think it's almost like this one-sided opinion or one-sided solution that we give ourselves actually becomes our problem, right? Because we're so, like you said, hyper-focused that we think we know the answer and it's like, okay, this is it. And then that's all, we didn't think about any other path. We didn't think about any other perspective, right? And then when you, obviously you would think about something, it's going to become a problem because you're not thinking about anything else. So then that could be a problem because you're not thinking about it. So things you need to get done, right? So
are you down for a little psychological game real quick?
Yeah.
For people listening, this could be kind of interesting. All right. So if you're just listening to this, I'm going to put you through a little psychological test. Like, don't worry. It's not gonna be too weird. So here's what I want everyone to do. If you're listening, maybe you're driving, so don't close your eyes if you're driving, but if you're just sitting in a room, close your eyes. And I want you to picture a white elephant, and it could be a cartoon elephant, an African elephant, it could be an Asian elephant, like whatever, it could be anything. So I want you to picture the tusks, picture the trunk, picture the feet, picture the wrinkly skin, and just hold that in your mind just for a second. Okay, so I have my phone out, and I have a timer set. And for the next 30 seconds, 30 seconds is going to feel like a lot on a dead air podcast, but just roll with me. For the next 30 seconds, I want you to not think about that white elephant. And if you do, if you mess up, if you make a mistake, I want you to snap your fingers. And I want you to count how many times you snap your fingers and you mess up. Okay, ready? Do not think about the white elephant, and go. And done. All right. You only snapped. How many times did you snap?
I snapped once.
Good job. That's probably the best score I've ever seen.
Which is really
I saw your eyes rapidly going around the room. What were you doing?
Well, I was like, the game, wait, hold on. Because you said it two different ways. Were we supposed to think about the white elephant?
No, you're supposed to not think about the white elephant.
Okay. At the start, you said
thinking about it?
No, at the start, you said the other way. I saw your TikTok. So I already knew this. So I've practiced. That's why I was so good. Cause I was like,
that's
okay,
good. That's good. That's good. So at the beginning, like you're holding it in your mind, and then immediately once you put the rule in place that you're not supposed to think about it.
Oh, I'm really good at not thinking about things because
good job.
Oh, ADHD is my best friend.
Yeah,
so
yeah, that's great. Well, I play this game with, you know, hundreds and hundreds of people. And so the average is about 4. So if you're listening and you got like 3 to 4 snaps, that's about the average. I had one lady fall asleep during the exercise once. So she won. She got 0.
Oh, because she closed her eyes.
She closed her eyes. And I was like, don't think about the white elephant. And she just fell asleep. And I was like, wow, okay, she beat the game. She did it. She's she's top scorer. And then you're right, there's people that, like yourself, that have this ability to just kind of like rapidly fill your mind with other things for like 30 seconds, maybe snap once or twice.
Yeah. Oh, literally the reason why I thought about it was because I was like, wait, what am I thinking about?
Yeah.
What am I supposed to be thinking about? And then that's when I thought about it. I was like, okay, the tusks. And I was like, oh, shit.
And that's exactly it, because you can't actually measure if you're winning the game without thinking about the game.
Whoa, you just ruined the game. I just lost the game.
That's it.
That's
literally, it's the same psychological thing, because, and that happens with thoughts. So like, hey, be positive. Mm-hmm. Like when you think, just be positive. And then you think, well, why do I have to be positive? Oh crap, because I have these negative thoughts. Oh, I just remembered the negative thought. And it's almost like the mental game of, okay, be positive, think positively, actually becomes a reminder for the negative thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And in relationships, it's like, oh, I don't know if this is the right thing. I don't know if we're actually in love. I don't know if this is good. Okay, don't think about that. Just try to be in the moment. Be in the moment. Just try to see the positives. And it's like when you're forcing yourself not to think about something, just the presence of that rule is going to really mess you up. It's going to actually trip you and actually make the negative thoughts intrude into your mind at a higher rate. Because if you think about it, even now, like as you're listening, how many times have you thought about a white elephant since, you know, we stopped playing the game?
Probably a few times.
Yeah, a few times. Okay, yeah. And for some people, it's like they'll look at me and it's like, oh, I've barely thought of it at all.
Yeah.
And it's
for me, I have to retrack. I'm like, okay, wait, because I get so lost in other things, because my mind's always wandering, or my eyes are always wandering. I find myself tracking back to be like, okay, wait, hold on. What are we talking about? We got to be in this. That's just yeah, who I am. That's what I do. I totally forgot what I was going to say next. So
it's all right. Well, I was going to say that's interesting about that exercise too, is asking people, okay, what were you doing to not think about the white elephant? And it's usually distraction. I had to think about something else. And I had to fill my mind with something. Like, I had one person was like, I thought about a white rabbit. I'm like, that's a good idea. You know, it's
to think about something so like almost similar, but different, to notice the detail in what's the differences. That's interesting. What I would do, what I always found really, really cool, when I was in my, I think it was like when I was 22 and I was like really trying to find out what I liked, I started going on a lot of dates, and I would be a little, I was always a little bit more comfortable, especially going after on tour. I was comfortable with talking to people. I was comfortable with creating conversation and kind of just really making sure that people feel heard and they're comfortable to talk about whatever they want to talk about. But a lot of times I found them getting kind of lost in it. Their sentences like were not structured. It didn't make sense. And I was like, okay, they're feeling really nervous. And I would always go down and I would touch my shoe. And what would they do? They would go down and touch their shoe. And I'm like, okay, they're paying too much attention to these, like, they're really hyper-focused on something right now. I was like, and then I would touch my face and they'd touch their face. And I was like, okay, they're really focused on me, that they're not even thinking about what they're saying. But then I would start talking and they'd be like, they would just like stare at me. And I'm like, oh jeez, this is terrifying. But every time they got to talk, you know, it was also nerves, but their sentences would just like, just go everywhere. And then whenever I found that, I wouldn't interrupt in a mean way, but I'd be like, I would just reference something that we've already talked about. Again, just like that joke, just like I said. And when I did that, they became more comfortable. Right. And they immediately would like, they calmed down. They're like, oh yeah. So I went to school for this. And I was like, okay, why? And then they would like, they would feel more comfortable right away. And so I don't know. You kind of just got to, a really, really good friend is really good at snapping you out of things, right? Yeah. Which is really interesting.
That's good.
Yeah.
I love that. Yeah. What other questions did you get?
Oh, well, we're running out of time here. So let's go to the last one. Last one is the biggest one. I think it's the most common thing in the entire world, and that's heartbreak. Right? You know, how do you get over someone is the biggest thing. And do you have a good answer other than time?
You know, I think you said something good a while back, where a lot of the relational problems that we had in high school are really similar to the marriage problems and the more complex problems people have later in life. Like, there's a lot of common themes. And so I work with a lot of people trying to cope and recover from a divorce or something really catastrophic that happened, and like their kids are really traumatized, and it can be really intense. But I also talk to a lot of teenagers who are getting through just, you know, maybe their first crush and feeling rejected. And I think where heartbreak can go awry is in a couple of things. One, where you have this rule in your head that any closure in order to heal, that trips people up, because what that is a dependence on the other person in order to heal. It's like you're making this rule in your own head that they need to do something. They need to cooperate with a set of expectations that I have in my own mind in order for me to feel like I can move on. And what that does is keeps people perpetually codependent on their ex.
It's funny, because I just made a thing on that.
Oh, really? Yeah. What'd you say?
Last night, I talked about that. I was like, the reason why we have, because somebody asked me about getting over someone you love that you weren't with. They worded it way better than I just did. But basically, like falling in love with somebody online that you've never met, that they weren't in love with you. It's like falling in somebody who didn't even know you existed. And I'm like, well, the hard thing to get over that is because you're constantly looking for closure. You're constantly looking for them to play your game. And you're looking for feedback. And so that's really difficult for other people to move forward. In my book, I wrote about this one breakup I had. I was devastated that it just like wasn't going a certain way. And I broke up with this girl and she didn't respond the way I wanted to.
Right.
And that sat with me for so long. Like, I think, and it makes me sound like an asshole, but in the book I wrote, she didn't cry when I broke her heart. And that broke me much more. And it's because I was waiting for her to play my game, right? And she didn't. She played her own.
And that's such a good line. Wow, that's so powerful. That's good.
Thank you.
Yeah, because there's, I think the grief there is, I wasn't as important to you as I thought I was. Mm-hmm. You know, or maybe I wasn't as important to you as you were to me.
So how would you say that somebody kind of works against that?
Well, so a few things. One is, I think the way that this expresses itself is people perpetually like maybe stalking their ex on social media to see if they're happy, to see if they moved on. Their next partner, they're trying to figure out, okay, what does this girl or guy have that I don't? Like, how is this person superior to me? And they kind of just treat their ex like this perfect standard of like femininity or masculinity. And it's like masculinity rejected me, not just this guy.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, you know, it's like, you know, it's, I'm undesirable to the male race, not just to, you know, Devin, you know, or whatever. It's, and that's a really big trap to fall into. So I think there's a little bit of insight and perspective in being able to say like, people have different tastes and they're in different times of their life and they have different priorities. They have different things that they need or don't need. And sometimes it's someone's fault, like it's someone's an error, and sometimes it's just not a good match. Like all of those things, like sometimes I ask people to step outside of maybe even just their situation and talk about another friend that they know that went through a breakup. And be like, if they were in your situation, if they were struggling with this, what advice would you give to them?
Yeah.
And usually that sobers up a little bit of the codependence that they're feeling in their heart towards their ex. It's like, I need his or her approval to feel like I have worth, and I need to know what is insufficient in me from them so that I can fix it, so next time I don't get into that. And those are all rules. Those are all games that we play. Maybe we don't think that like bar for bar in our heads, but emotionally we're almost acting that out. And that gets really complex really quickly.
Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah. I have one of my best friends. He was dating someone for years. I forget how long. And he's a very tough guy, but I've never seen that guy cry more than when his girlfriend broke up with him. He's like the classic tough guy. Like, he makes his jokes and everything, but I never seen him cry more. And only to me. And what I learned from that is, it's a tough thing to say. It's also not something that I would necessarily recommend to somebody. But when going through a breakup, when trying to get over somebody, I think it's important to go through the breakup, to be broken, right? To acknowledge the fact and accept the fact that like this happened. Like I find a lot of people are like, okay, how do we make myself feel okay? How do I make myself feel better? Like, I need them to give me this closure to make it all okay, to make it all go away. And like, okay, we're friends, we're happy. But then when somebody says something like that, you're just like, okay, so we're going to get back together. So like, it's fine right now. Right. And so we're still, again, we're going back in that limbo. And you know, we're in this world where we're not even addressing like the issue, the problem that we're facing. And so I think it's really important to just go through the breakup, go through the eating the ice cream, go through the crying, go through the watching sad movies, listen to sad music, like go through it. And you'll learn a lot about yourself. That's not something that I would necessarily like recommend, maybe on like even a therapy level, but that's something that I've definitely noticed is like when I went through a really, really tough breakup, I didn't acknowledge it for so long. And it was awful. And then I went through that little bad period. Maybe it was like, I don't know, 2 weeks to a month, maybe. And it was awful. But I came out of that stronger than ever. And I was like, this little 2 weeks, a month was really hard, but it was way better than this year that I didn't acknowledge the situation in a whole. So that's like the personal experience that I can recommend.
I love that. I also think journaling sometimes is super helpful for people because you actually use a different part of your brain when you journal than when you just think in your own head or even when you talk. You know, so there's something about journaling that actually helps you just think more because you're forced to kind of put things in order. You're forced to put things into words.
Yeah.
And so like some journal prompts that I usually kind of push people towards is like, just like, what are the beliefs about yourself that you had after this relationship? Like, what influences is this relationship having on your opinion of you? And then things just like, what did you learn out of this? Like, what did you take away? Like, and even prompts like, what were the best parts of this? Like, what were the best parts of this relationship? And that's hard. It's heartbreaking to hold on to that, because you just want to, there's a false comfort in just thinking the whole thing is a mess and they're just a jerk and it was just all terrible. Right. A holistic picture, your heart will actually be comforted and mourning. And that's kind of what we're talking about, is genuinely mourning the relationship in its entirety.
I think it's important. I mean, I'm also a big fan of, almost being friends with your ex, not like best buddy buddy. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think you should be best buddy buddy with your ex, but like, you care for this person. I don't, mm-hmm. like, unless it ended really badly, I don't think it's an awful thing to, you know, I don't think this is for when you immediately break up and you're going through your heartbreak to like stalk them or anything, but
right.
it doesn't hurt to think about them every now and then, mm-hmm. you know, to think about how they're doing. Like, they were a huge part of your life, depending on how long the relationship was and how invested you were, how much you knew their family and stuff. But I don't think it's awful. Like my girlfriend right now, she dated somebody for 8 years, and mm-hmm. I would never hold it to her that she couldn't talk to that family of her again. Mm-hmm. That's 8 years of somebody's life that they were connected to. Like, that's super important. That's actually that's a huge factor of what made her the way she is and how much she learned mm-hmm. about herself now. Right.
Yeah.
And so I think when we think about breakups, it's like immediately over. And mm-hmm. maybe that relationship is, but your thoughts don't have to be, you don't have to put something so negative in your mind, right? Mm-hmm. Again, they obviously, if somebody does something awful to you, you could hate them. You don't want to kill them. But if it's just an ending relationship, like a lot of relationships actually end in a pretty normal way, pretty, very mutual. Yeah. And so to add such a negative thing to that right away, I think is normal to be like, but like, if you're still thinking negatively about that in 5 years, then there's something there that you got to address.
Yeah.
Right. And that's a huge sign for people.
Yeah. I think the theme I hear in what you're saying too, is just like, don't put rules around the breakup necessarily. Sometimes the rules are the most painful parts. Like, I can't be feeling sad right now. I shouldn't, because they hurt me. I shouldn't be feeling positive feelings towards them. That's a big one.
Yeah.
Like, they betrayed me. I shouldn't still love them. Or, you know, I shouldn't be still feeling this several months later. I should be moved on by now. It's all these shoulds.
Yeah.
You know, like, I had a friend, I don't recommend this as like a bumper sticker or tagline for anybody, but my friend was like, yeah, stop shooting on it all over yourself. And I was like, that's gross and grotesque. But it always stuck with me. So I always, like, with clients, it's with some of them, it's just a joke. It's like, you're shooting on yourself again. You need to stop shooting. And because there's all these rules that keep people locked in.
So, but it's so good. And this was this last one, because I actually wrote this last question.
But
I think I worded it in a way that people think a lot, but they haven't asked it yet. When you go through a breakup, you're hurting. And a lot of times when they're stalking each other on Instagram, whatever, you're like, oh my God, they look so happy. You always ask yourself, but why don't they seem to be hurting? Why are they not going through the pain that I am right now? Like, they seem fine out of this breakup. Why am I dying? Right.
Yeah.
What do you say to that? That's tough. I find that's.
Yeah. I'll mull it over. What are your thoughts on that? What's your reaction as you've been sitting with that?
I think it's important to understand that people handle things differently.
Yeah.
Right. Like, when you come out of a breakup, when you come out of something that was so, that impacted you so emotionally and like in every way, I find love hits us in every aspect.
Yeah.
Right. We like our bodies, everything, mentally, physically, mm-hmm. emotionally. And so when somebody comes out of a breakup, they can go any which way very drastically. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. You kind of cling on to something that feels comfortable to them.
Yeah.
And what seems to be right at the time. And that's, you know, everyone's going to handle it differently. And I think that's super important to understand, mm-hmm. is that they definitely are hurting. They definitely are. And I don't think there's a certain measure of pain that's going to equal what you're feeling.
Yeah.
And I think that the thing to ask yourself is like, if they were hurting more or the same as you, would that make you happy? Mm. Why? Why would that make you happy? Mm. That they don't want to be here, or, you know, like, why would you ever wish that upon somebody, especially somebody that you loved, even though it ended? Mm. So I think, because I think thinking negatively has never been hard, right? Negative thoughts have never been hard to come up with. So I think once you go through your tough points of a breakup, I think at the end of it, it's important to think about the positive things that were in it, you know? So instead of like, why don't they seem to be hurting? I think maybe word it a little bit differently and be like, what are they up to? What's making them happy now?
Yeah.
Right. And it's not that I didn't make them happy. It's just perspective, right? Mm. And then you ask yourself, what's making me happy? Right.
Yeah. I align really closely to that. That's really good. I think, the only point I'd add is sometimes people don't hurt, and sometimes you break up with someone and they're not broken up about it at all. Like maybe especially like where the relationships that have been fizzling out for a while, or there's some big betrayal where someone leaves and they don't look like they're heartbroken. And I'll just say, even if they're not, that doesn't mean you're not valuable.
Yeah.
Even if you're not, that doesn't mean that means you don't matter, or your love didn't matter, or you were disposable.
Especially if it's been fizzling out, they could have been going through heartbreak while in the relationship.
Yeah, that's actually, really well said. Absolutely. And the heartbreak happens at some point. Yeah.
Yeah, it will. It will. Mm-hmm. But then obviously that's tough, because then somebody's going to ask the question, when were they breaking up? Well, when were they breaking when we were dating? And then that's obviously that's something
it's different for every person.
It's different for every person. You got to sit down, you got to talk about that. I think that's good. I think that's awesome.
Joy, you're making such good stuff, man.
Thank you.
I've been really excited. I watch you every day and really enjoy just the way you're putting stuff into words and the art that you're making. And I think you have a really big rapport with the people that follow your stuff, because you're honest. And that's not something I can say about a lot of creators. And
thank you.
As from the outset, like, I think what builds my trust, what gets me, you know, searching your page and looking up for it and seeing what you're posting every night is like, gosh, there's a genuine honesty and authenticity to what you're making. You don't seem like you're trying to use your audience for some ulterior thing.
I mean, I need them.
Yeah, but not to their own detriment, maybe, if that makes sense.
Right. Well, I mean, I think the same about you. I think I spent the first 30 minutes of this complimenting your content. I think you're doing amazing things. Yeah. And definitely keep it up. And best of luck with the pregnancy and everything.
Yeah, thanks.
And congrats. That's amazing. That's amazing. All I have is a dog. So,
hey, that's great too.
Yeah. Just a hairier baby. But thank you very much for coming on the podcast. I think it'd be cool to do another one in the future, but we'll see the response to this one and see how people like it. And
love it.
Cool. Yeah.
Well, anytime, man. Anytime.
Cool. Thank you. Well, thank you very much. I know that was a really, really long podcast, but it was one of my favorite ones that I've ever made. And I hope it helped you see from many different sides. I hope it opened your eyes. I hope it made you think in the best way possible. And if it did, please, please, please let me know, or let Matthias and I know, and DM us or follow us on TikTok or wherever. And it'd be really interesting to see if it was impactful for anybody and how it did. But thank you guys so much for listening and watching, and you guys are amazing, and stay you, stay beautiful, and we'll talk to you guys next time. Bye.
Grand Canyon University, an affordable private Christian university, is one of the largest and fastest growing universities in the country, offering more than 270 programs online. In addition to federal grants and aid, GCU's online students received nearly $130 million in institutional scholarships in 2022. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu/myoffer to see the scholarships you may qualify for.